Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier. It's Friday, August 13th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier is forecasting a partly sunny and pleasant day today, with a high of only 84 degrees. And this evening, we go down to 52 degrees for the low, under clear skies. The week ahead looks a lot cooler, with highs in the lower 80s, and lows in the 50s and 60s. Skies will be mostly sunny and pleasant throughout Tuesday. Looking at the front page, we have these articles about the census. Rural Iowa shrinks, cities grow. Ragbri worth $2.4 million to Waterloo. And let's begin with dreams come true. Big leaguers are awestruck at the Field of Dreams. Story filed by Dave Campbell of the Associated Press, and begins with a photograph of White Sox first baseman Andrew Vaughn as he walks through the cornfield outside the temporary stadium built for Thursday's Field of Dreams game against the Yankees in Dyersville, Iowa. Dyersville. As the bus carried the New York Yankees through the cornfields blanketing this serene, rolling farmland of northeast Iowa, Aaron Judge noticed a difference from the usual arrival in the next city. The ride to Field of Dreams site to play the Chicago White Sox on Thursday night had everyone's attention, like a bunch of kids who couldn't believe what they were getting to do. Quote, it was the first time people had their headphones out, and they were just glued to the windows, checking out the scenery, said Judge, the three-time All-Star right fielder. Quote, we have a lot of guys from different countries who really haven't seen the country like this, or guys from big cities who really haven't seen open fields and stuff like this, so it's pretty cool driving in and seeing everybody in town kind of standing on the side of the road with signs and cheering us on, he said. The made-for-TV event, delayed by a year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, had the billing as the first major league baseball game in this state that's usually focused on college and community sports, spotlighted by presidential campaigns and fueled by the hog and grain industry. Judge provided a pair of picture-perfect images. Launching two long drives into the cornstalks, Tim Anderson hit the eighth homer of the game, a two-run liner in the ninth inning that lifted the White Sox over the Yankees in a 9-8 thriller. Anderson delivered a Hollywood ending too, circling the bases as fireworks exploded. So what if it was more from the natural than the Field of Dreams? This wouldn't be a one-time visit either. Commissioner Rob Manfred confirmed that the Field of Dreams game will return in August 2022, with the teams to be determined. The made-from-scratch stadium, built to hold about 8,000 fans, watch the White Sox and Yankees play in one of the most anticipated mid-August games in history, was placed next to the actual diamond where the 1989 movie starring Kevin Costner was shot outside the town of Dyersville, population 4,000. Costner came back for this, stealing the scene with a slow, ponderous stroll onto the outfield his catcher Ray Kinsella often took in the film, before stopping to watch the real White Sox and Yankees emerge from the corn for pre-game introductions, clutching a ball in his hand while the original symphonic score from the movie played over the loudspeakers. Costner stepped up to a microphone and told the crowd, "It's perfect." White Sox slugger Jose Abreu delivered an instant highlight in the first inning, hitting a line drive that zipped over the fence in the left field and vanished into the corn. Judge connected for a three-run smash in the third and a two-run drive in the ninth. Neither was a can of corn. They both flew far. There were rows upon rows of corn between the two outfields, in fact. Yes, it's the same spot where Shoeless Joe Jackson and his pals appeared and disappeared throughout the Academy Award-nominated film about fathers, children, culture, self-discovery, ghosts, and, oh yeah, baseball. Quote, as a kid, you dream of the chance to play Major League Baseball and you watch certain movies or heroes in comic books and fairy tales, and getting a chance to actually be at the Field of Dreams and play a game here and have family and friends here, and getting a chance to represent the Yankees here, never in my life did I think I'd ever experience this, Judge said. Major leaguers can be particular about the details when they're on a road trip, desiring to maximize comfort and minimize intrusion for optimal performance on the field. But nobody minded any of the logistic hurdles of playing this game, a four-hour drive from Chicago, and about a half-hour ride from the airport in Dubuque, where both teams flew in. White Sox closer Liam Hendricks was all smiles as he recounted his exploration of the White farmhouse where the Kinsella family lives in the movie that's been well kept as a tourist attraction. Both teams had their fill of movie reenactment moments during pregame photo ops on the original field before retreating into the corn and returning to the regulation stadium to prepare for the game. The players were politely warned not to scrape their faces on the stalks and not to try to enter the maze, one of the fan attractions added to the site for the event, to avoid getting lost. Anyone who follows me on Instagram is going to be very sick of corn, said Hendricks, whose phone storage had filled up after all the photos and videos he recorded. Judge was born 3 years after Field of Dreams was released, but his father introduced him to the movie when he was a kid, and he quickly became a big fan. He noted that some of his younger teammates had not yet seen the film. Quote, I think one of these nights we're going to sit down and I'll have a DVD for him ready to go, Judge said with a wide smile. The film, naturally, remains a strong source of local pride, and the Iowa residents were given purchasing priority when the limited amount of public tickets went on sale. The Field of Dreams ghost players, many of whom were extras in the film, gathered on the movie field in the afternoon in their 1919-style uniforms in honor of Jackson's Black Sox team that plays a key part in the plot. Quote, it's given us a real identity. When you think of Dyersville, it's Field of Dreams. And all the publicity we've been getting lately has just been tremendous for the town and the area, said Jude Milbert, one of the ghost players who developed a Globetrotters-style troupe after their involvement in the film by putting on youth clinics, doing comedy routines, and traveling around the world as ambassadors of the game. They're all former college or semi-pro players who live in Northeast Iowa. The ghost players and everyone else can get ready for more next year. Quote, you never mess with a winning streak. But it does feel like all the teams are going to want to touch this. There's going to be hot competition to play this, Costner said before the game. And now for something completely different. We have a story about the census results that were just dropped yesterday. Iowa cities grow, rural areas shrink. Story by James Q. Lynch of the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Iowa's population grew 4.7% from 2010 to 2020, according to the Census Bureau data released Thursday, with nearly 80% of the growth happening in the state's four largest counties, while 68 counties posted population losses. Overall, census data showed Iowa grew by 144,014 people since the 2010 count, exceeding the 4.1 increase of 120,031 in the first decade of the 21st century. Growth was concentrated in and around the urban centers of Polk, Johnson, Linn, and Scott counties. The fastest growing county was Dallas, west of Des Moines, with an increase of 50.7%, 33,543. Johnson was the state's second fastest growing county at 16.8%, which was 21,972 people. Polk grew by 14.3%, 61,761, and Linn by 9%, 19,073, and Scott by 5.7%, 9,445. Although growth was clustered around cities, not all urban areas made gains. Black Hawk County, the state's fifth largest, with 131,144 people in the latest census, and home to Waterloo, lost 54 residents over the decade. The population of Cerro Gordo County, home of Mason City, dropped by 2.3%, which amounted to 1,024 people. Quote, in a way, it's really sort of the same old story that the state overall is growing a little bit, said David Peters, an Iowa State University sociology professor. Quote, but even though as a state we're growing, it's kind of masks a lot of unevenness. So you have phenomenally fast growth rates in the state's large urban centers and an exodus of people in most of rural Iowa, unquote. According to the census, these things follow. Tiffin had the highest rate of growth in the state, 131.7%. Growth in its Johnson County neighbors of 53.1% in North Liberty and 48.2% in Solon helped fuel the country's growth rate. Coralville's and Iowa City's population grew at lower rates, 18% and 10.3% respectively, but well above the state average. To the north in Linn County, the rate of growth was spurred by Palo at 37%, Fairfax at 33%, and Cedar Rapids 9%, bringing the city's population to 137,710 people. The new data also showed Iowa becoming more diverse, with an increase in the number of Black and Hispanic Iowans equal to about three-quarters of the overall growth. Still, 2,694,521, or 84.5% of Iowans, identified as white alone. But that's down from 88.7% 10 years earlier. Iowa's Hispanic numbers increased 64,442 to 215,986 from 5% in 2010 to 6.8% today. Nationally, Hispanics are 18.7% of the population. 10 years ago, Blacks were 2.9% of Iowa's population. That's up to 4.1%, an increase of 43,628 to 131,926. Nationally, Blacks are 12.4% of the population. The change in diversity can be seen in various ways, including in what the Census Bureau calls its diffusion score, an indication of how diverse and unconcentrated the population is relative to the three largest racial and ethnic groups. Iowa's diffusion score rose from 3.5% to 6.5% over the past decade, while the nation's rose from 7.7% to 11.4%. The five counties with the highest diversity indexes, Buena Vista, Crawford, Woodbury, Marshall, and Polk, did not change from 2010 to 2020. But the probability that two people chosen at random in any of those counties will be from different race and ethnic groups increased. In Buena Vista County, for example, the diversity index increased from 48.4% to 61%. Although the number of minorities grew, ISU's Peters noted that it wasn't in areas that previously saw an influx of Hispanics. Louisa, Crawford, and Marshall counties that had seen growth in previous counts showed overall population losses of 4.8, 3.3, and 1.3, respectively. Only a handful of rural counties, mostly in northwest Iowa, saw population increases. Population gains ranged from 6 in Cedar County to 61,761 in Polk, while losses ranged from 56 in Carroll County to 2,656 in Clinton County. The least populous county is Adams County in southwest Iowa, which has 3,704 people, a decline of 8.1%, or 325 people. Polk County continued to have the most people, with 492,000 404, a 14.3% increase of 61,761 people. It also is the most densely populated county with 860.5 people per square mile. The new population data comes with political implications that will drive policy decisions, Drake University political scientist Dennis Goldford said Tuesday. Democrats are incredibly dependent on votes in the sixth largest counties. Now retired U.S. Senator Tom Harkin won re-election in 1996, and Tom Vilsack, now the U.S. Agricultural Secretary, was elected governor 2 years later by carrying the largest counties by wide enough margins to offset losses in rural Iowa. More recently, Republicans have flipped that script. Republicans have largely been the party of rural Iowa and suburbs. It may not be a fair representation of Democrats, Goldford said, but they are seen as the party of cities. Quote, it's not that Democrats are ignoring rural Iowa, Goldford said. Quote, their problem is to figure out rural Iowa. They don't have to win, but they can't lose so badly if they hope to win statewide races and U.S. House seats. The new population numbers will be used to redraw U.S. House and Iowa legislative districts. Iowa uses a nonpartisan redistricting process that must be approved by the Iowa legislature. Iowa won't lose any of its four congressional districts, but the loss of people in rural Iowa and gains in cities likely will result in significant changes of the boundaries of those election districts. Republicans represent the first and second districts, despite Democratic voter registration advantages there. In the fourth, the GOP has over 81,000 more active voters than does the Democratic Party. Goldford speculated that Democratic U.S. Representative Cindy Axne in the 3rd District may be the most affected by redistricting. In 2020, she was reelected by running up her margin in Polk County while losing the other 15 counties in the district. Quote, because Iowa's not losing a district, redistricting will tinker around the edges, he said. Tinkering sounds minor, but if you're on the edge, like Axne, you're vulnerable, unquote. And now here's another story all about numbers. Ragbri is worth $2.4 million to Waterloo, the story filed by Amy Rivers, and begins with a photograph of cyclists as they ride through downtown Waterloo as they depart for Anamosa on day 5 of Ragbri ride on Thursday. Waterloo. Ragbri riders and accompanying visitors dropped an estimated $2.4 million into the coffers of local business owners as the annual ride passed through town. Quote, the businesses were very happy with the turnout and greatly appreciated their kindness, said Jessica Rucker, executive director of downtown business group Main Street Waterloo. Quote, it was an amazing opportunity to showcase all downtown Waterloo has to offer. The way the community came together to make this happen demonstrates how amazing Waterloo is, unquote. Travis Hall, Experience Waterloo's executive director, who oversaw the Waterloo Ragbri stop, thanked several city staffers for their help during the August 2nd Waterloo City Council meeting. Quote, it was a labor of love, Hall said. He noted that because the pandemic canceled 2020's ride, his committee had been preparing for nearly 2 years. Quote, we legitimately had a great Ragbri experience, and it definitely demonstrates what can happen when folks come together, Hall said. Ragbri's business boom hit Cedar Falls as well, though the city wasn't directly in the ride's path, said Amanda Huseman, the city's communication specialist. Quote, we did see and hear that these events helped increase traffic to our local businesses and establishments, she said. Black Hawk County Sheriff Tony Thompson told the Black Hawk County Board of Supervisors August 3rd that there were only 3 medical calls out of the tens of thousands of riders and spectators. 2 were heat-related, and 1 was an asthma attack, he said. There was a preliminary report of a stolen bicycle, but it ended up being a heavy night for the gentleman, Thomas said, noting the intoxicated man located his bicycle about 15 minutes later. Quote, all in all, Ragbri was a very positive experience, both for law enforcement as well as, I hope, for the riders, he added. We were very, very pleased with the outcome. Waterloo Mayor Quinton Hart called the overnight stop an incredible team effort. I talked to riders from Florida to Maine to California, and people were really excited about Waterloo, Iowa, Hart said. It was a really good shot in the right direction. Councillor Ray Fuse called Ragbri a great event that really represented Waterloo. He didn't hear of any major incidents other than a train, though he didn't elaborate. I think Waterloo should be very proud, he said. Councillor Margaret Klein, who said she directed traffic and cyclists on Burton Avenue in the sun for 3 hours, echoed those comments. Quote, the people coming in from all parts of the country, they were so interested in us, and we were interested in them, she said. J.B. Bolger, who oversees Waterloo's golf operations, complimented Experience Waterloo during the Leisure Services meeting on August 10th. Quote, we did not have trashed parks, Bolger said. City Forester Tom Derrifield said Bolger and Fire Chief Pat Chevlar worked hard clearing out spiders and their webs from the 4th Street Bridge, dumping garbage cans, and kicking people off the Fairview Cemetery where they were camping on gravesites, unquote. Quote, it wasn't a designated camping area, Derrifield added. He didn't say how many attempted to camp there. Overall, Derrifield said, he was just amazed with Ragbri cleanup. Quote, I went through the parks they were in after they left. There wasn't any litter anywhere, he said. There were a couple of areas where there were no garbage cans, and at the curb there were a bunch of garbage sacks piled up neatly. I've never seen anything like it, unquote. Okay, that's the end of the stories from the front page. Now let's turn to the Cedar Valley section. A big read in Our Town. Your chance to read Thornton Wilder play before it takes stage. Melody Parker wrote this story for us. Waterloo. Some stories stand the test of time. Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning drama, Our Town, is one of those timeless stories, not only because, as critics have said, it is the greatest American play ever written, but also because its humanity still touches audiences to their core. Our Town will be on stage at the Waterloo Community Playhouse from September 17th through the 26th. Through the Big Read program, copies of the book will be provided to libraries, book clubs, and individuals to read and engage in discussions ahead of the show's opening. Discounts will be offered to groups participating in the program to see the entire production. Quote, it's a wonderful outreach opportunity for us to invite people to participate in something they love to do, read, but who haven't been interested in getting involved in theater or attending a play, said outreach coordinator Jacqueline Madison. Free copies of the book are available on a first-come, first-served basis at the WCP's Walker Building, 224 Commercial Street. Copies can also be checked out at local libraries. The Big Read program is made possible by the National Endowment for the Arts and Arts Midwest. Quote, this is a new direction for the theater to go, encouraging people to explore the playhouse. Not everyone wants to be an actor or work behind the scenes, but this is one of the ways we can welcome new patrons to the theater to see a show, Madison said. Quote, our goal is to have some structured book readings or discussions, have scenes or vignettes performed to allow people who are reading the book to see a little bit of it played out in front of them, and the culmination will be the production in September, he explained. WCP Executive Director Norman Usery said the Big Read program participants may be invited to a rehearsal as well. We're trying to demystify the theater. Our Town has been part of our culture. Anyone who has dabbled in theater during high school is probably familiar with the play. I've been to several events where people have introduced themselves and talk about Our Town and remember what they did in the play in high school. It's become a badge that people wear, he said. Wilder wrote the three-act play in 1938 about the everyday lives of townspeople in fictional Grover's Corners. It is frequently revived in high school and community theaters across the country, Usery said. Wilder used the meta-theatrical device of setting the play in a theater where it is being performed. As the main character, the stage manager declares, quote, "This is the way we were, in our growing up and in our marrying, and in our living and in our dying," unquote. The story follows the lives of childhood friends George Gibbs and Emily Webb, who grew up, fall in love, and marry. Although written almost a century ago, Usery said the play connects with people because relationships and how relationships form and grow has not changed. How we are as human beings has not changed, and this gets to that core. It traces the entire life of a young girl and beyond, and the smallest things are recorded in our personal history like a series of photographs. Those are the moments you remember that leap out and become your history, unquote. The question the play asks, quote, "Does anybody realize what life is while they're living it?" unquote, transcends race, gender, and all of the divisions that we bring and use to differentiate ourselves. That's one reason it's such a universal story, Usery said. Book clubs and individuals wanting to be part of the big read may contact Madison via email at madisonj.o.626@gmail.com for more information. Next, a story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Girl hospitalized after being found in car in Cedar Falls. Four-year-old apparently entered the vehicle herself. Cedar Falls. Paramedics rushed a child to the hospital after she was found in a parked car Thursday afternoon. The child's condition wasn't available, and it wasn't clear how long she had been in the vehicle. Outdoor temperatures at the time were around 90 degrees, according to the National Weather Service. The four-year-old apparently entered the vehicle on her own while it was parked in a residential neighborhood on Heritage Road, and the incident was an accident, said Jeff Olson, director of public safety for the city of Cedar Falls. According to Kids in Cars, a nonprofit child safety organization, 14 children have died in hot cars so far in 2021. They ranged in age from 5 months to 7 years old, and most involved the child being left in the vehicle by a parent or a caregiver. Two involved children who entered the vehicle on their own. In 2020, 26 children perished in hot car incidents, according to Kids in Cars. On average, 39 such deaths are reported annually. The organization said people who notice a child left alone in a vehicle should call 911 immediately. If the child isn't responsive or is in distress, the child should be removed from the vehicle immediately and moved to a cooler area, like a location with air conditioning or the shade. Removing the clothing will dissipate the heat, as well as cool water or wet rags. If the child is responsive and not in distress, someone should remain with the child while another person tries to locate the driver, according to Kids in Cars. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, August 13th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Sandra Sandy Sue Young, 84, of Waterloo, formerly of Evansdale, died on Tuesday, August 10th, 2021, at Rosewood Estate. She was born on April 9th, 1937, in Waterloo, to Harold and Ruth Nichols Hedgedorn. She worked at Black's Department Store as a purchasing agent before becoming a school bus driver for the Waterloo Community School District for several years. She then worked in the cafeteria at Rath Packing Company and later spent some years as a social worker. Sandy married William A. Young, June 8, 1954, in Evansdale. He died July 25, 2001. She was a longtime member of St. Mark's United Methodist Church in Evansdale. Sandy was very artistic and enjoyed painting, particularly on vintage saw blades and old pieces of wood. Service will be 2 o'clock p.m. on Friday, August 13, 2021, at Locke Funeral Home, with burial in Garden of Memories Cemetery, both in Waterloo. Visitation for 1 hour prior to the service. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralhome.com. Michael C. Miller. Celebration of Life to take place on Saturday, August 14, 2021, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. at Bethany Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, the family has directed memorials to the American Heart Association. Private family interment to take place at St. John's Cemetery Mausoleum, Bethany Funeral Home, 8201 Harrison Street, La Vista, Nebraska, 68128, www.bethanyfuneralhome.com. Joyce Leela Hienga, Allison. Funeral services will be held Saturday, August 14th at 10:30 a.m. at the St. James Lutheran Church in Allison, Iowa. Visitation will be Friday, August 13th from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at the Sitzma Vogel Funeral Home in Allison, Iowa. Joyce Leela Hienga, 90, of Allison, Iowa, passed away at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo, Iowa, on August 11, 2021. She was born September 5, 1930, in Butler County, Iowa, to William and Maddie, maiden name Ruth, Harms. She married Carl Hayenga on September 12, 1948. Joyce was baptized on November 24, 1930. Later, she became a member of the St. James Lutheran Church in Allison. She was very active in the church all her life, helping out whenever she could. She worked on the church council, was a lesson leader, helped with the visitation and funeral committee, and was part of the WELCA women's group. Joyce graduated from Allison High School in 1948. In her lifetime, she loved bowling, tennis, and golf, receiving trophies in each sport. Whether sewing, knitting, drawing, or gardening, Joyce excelled at everything she tried. Joyce was the Butler County Relief Director for a number of years. Joyce's greatest joy came from attending all of her children and grandchildren's events. She also enjoyed cooking Sunday dinners and holiday meals for her loved ones. Robert Wilbur Bob, layman, formerly of Waterloo, passed away on August 9, 2021, at Bickford Senior Living in Cedar Falls. Bob was born on September 22, 1926, in Waterloo, to Chris and Hulda, maiden name Stormer, layman. He graduated from West High School, class of 1944. Bob served in the 7th Army Infantry Division from 1944 to 1946. Serving in the Pacific, he married Marlis Lee in 1948. They were happily married for 60 years before she passed away in 2008. Bob was a proud paperboy for the Courier in his youth. He worked for John G. Miller and Cardinal Construction, and he retired in 1989 as president of Cardinal Construction. Bob was a member of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Waterloo. He was a member and past president of the Associated Builders and Contractors. Bob was a past scoutmaster of Boy Scout Troop 29 at Castle Hill School. Bob built the past two houses he lived in on Rainbow Drive, where he resided for 66 years. He wintered in Mission, Texas. Bob enjoyed playing cards, golf, and his family. Memorials may be directed to Our Savior's Lutheran Church. A visitation will be held at Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories on Sunday, August 15, 2021, from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m., with a service on Monday, August 16, 2021, at 10 o'clock a.m. at Our Savior's Lutheran Church. After the burial at Garden of Memories Cemetery, a luncheon will be held at the church. Parrot and Wood is handling arrangements. Their phone number is area code 319-232-3235. Condolences may be left at www.parrotandwood.com. That was the last obituary on this page. Now let's continue with more local news. Heat from fire causes water leak that douses flames in Waterloo home. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. And we begin with a photograph of two firemen leaving the front door of the residence. Fire damaged the home at 4771 Edgebrook Drive, Waterloo, on Thursday, August 12, 2021. A candle was behind a Thursday afternoon fire that damaged the Waterloo home, but authorities said the fire at 4771 Edgebrook Drive could have been worse if the blaze hadn't melted solder on an overhead water line. Essentially, it created a sprinkler head. It was fortunate for them, said Battalion Chief Ben Peterson with Waterloo Fire Rescue. The blaze did cause fire damage to the basement bathroom and the utility room, displacing the two adults and four children who lived there. There was also heat damage to the rest of the basement and heavy smoke damage to the rest of the home, Peterson said. The American Red Cross was contacted to provide emergency shelter. No injuries were reported. The resident who was home at the time escaped along with the family dog, and firefighters removed a pet guinea pig. Peterson said it appears the fire started in the basement bathroom and the flames extended to the shower curtain and began to melt the fiberglass shower, which generated enough heat to melt solder on the water pipe. The water leak extinguished most of the blaze, and firefighters were able to finish off the rest, Peterson said. In the next story, filed by Rod Bosart, Iowa health leader pushes vaccinations. Des Moines. Concerned about spiking COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in Iowa, the state's public health leader Thursday called for a reinvigorated push to get more Iowans vaccinated. Quote, "We need folks to get vaccinated," Kelly Garcia, acting director of the State Department of Public Health and leader of the State Department of Human Services, told members of the Iowa Council on Human Services on Thursday. Quote, "Our vaccination rate in the state is higher than many of our southern partner states," she said. Quote, "We need to continue to make progress on that. That is the key. It is the answer. It is sitting right in front of us," unquote. Garcia's comments came one day after state officials reported Iowa added an average of almost 700 new COVID-19 cases per day over the past week, the highest average recorded since February. The number of Iowans hospitalized with COVID-related illnesses stood at 355 this week, the highest since 360 on February 4th. Of those hospitalized, 103 were in intensive care units, and 49 needed the aid of ventilators to breathe, according to the latest weekly figures issued by the state. Since the coronavirus was first detected in Iowa in March 2020, 387,273 residents have tested positive for the disease, and 6,210 have died from COVID-19. Iowa just passed 1.5 million inoculations, with 56% of the state's population aged 12 and older fully vaccinated, the state's public health agency reported. But more must be done, Garcia said. Public health officials, she said, are aggressively working on a reinvigoration of our campaign at the state level and working on a more grassroots effort here to make sure that folks step forward into this space. The public health leader called on council members, faith leaders, community leaders, and average Iowans to have bold and brave and courageous conversations with those who are hesitant, to take steps to protect themselves and others from potentially dangerous virus strains. Quote, "I know it's controversial," she said. "I'm experiencing that too. But if nothing else, my kids are going to go back to school in a week, right? And I need them to be safe. We are adults. We can get vaccinated. They can't right now. They're too little. I need us to step forward and do the right thing," she added. "It's going to take a lot of work, and we can do it together," unquote. Garcia told Thursday's council meeting, "The nation is experiencing a fourth coronavirus wave of really incredible widespread cases that is straining hospital systems in states south of Iowa, which has caught the attention of Iowa officials who are monitoring case data daily. Garcia said the current strain on Iowa's hospital system is due more to workforce issues than spiking COVID-19 cases, but she added, "The key to this is making sure that we pay attention to our hospital capacity and that we push on people getting vaccinations." After a drop in activity following the vaccine rollout, the pandemic is beginning to reemerge in force nationwide as the new highly transmissible Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads, especially among unvaccinated individuals. As of Monday, all but 8 counties in Iowa had a high or substantial level of community transmission of the virus, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Thursday marked the start of the 11-day Iowa State Fair, which was expected to bring more than 1 million visitors to the state fairgrounds in Des Moines. The event was canceled last year due to COVID-19 concerns. While the fair was in full swing, officials with the South Central Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, said their members decided not to have a traditional Labor Day parade on September 6th. Quote, "The delegates discussed their concerns for the safety of participants and the many folks that gathered to watch the parade," it said in a statement. Quote, "With the uncertainty of the virus and the now continued upward direction of infections and hospitalizations, and for an abundance of caution, we will not be celebrating Labor Day 2021 with a parade," unquote. And now let's read the Metro Briefs column. Music ensemble set to perform, Cedar Falls. The Musica Ficta Brass and the Percussion Ensemble will perform at 7 p.m. Tuesday in Overman Park. This is the third of 5 programs offered in the August Ensemble's concert series, sponsored by the Friends of Cedar Falls Band. Admission is free. Best Shot assists Adaptive Golf, Waterloo. Adaptive Golf Iowa, a subsidiary of the Hewsome Strong Foundation, will host the Live Lucky Charity 4-person Best Shot Golf Tournament and the Beginner's Luck Adaptive Golf Clinic on August 20th at Irv Warren Golf Course on Fletcher Avenue in Waterloo. The events will raise money to purchase additional adaptive golf equipment and provide resources for people with disabilities to play golf. The 4-person tournament will begin with a shotgun start at 1 o'clock p.m. with luncheon at noon. 3 sessions of the Beginner's Luck Adaptive Golf Clinic will take place at 9, 10, and 11 a.m. The clinic is free to anyone with a disability who would like to learn how to swing a golf club, use adaptive golf equipment, or just want to have fun. Adaptive golf provides an opportunity for anyone with a disability to get out and experience the joys of the game. Music event set at NCC, Waterloo. A music event put on by Carpe Diem will be held from 5 to 11 p.m. August 28th at the National Cattle Congress. The lineup includes Thyle Lone Wolf, Jax, C-Mac, Tae Young, Be Good, Illumisolium, Wave God TJ, Blotter, On Lee, Clay B, Wonk, Cotty, and Cuddy, and many other performers. Admission is $5 for students and $10 for the general public. Jeff Reinitz files this next story. Waterloo man with history of gun crimes sent to prison. Waterloo. A Waterloo man with a history of firearms crimes is headed back to prison. Judge C.J. Williams sentenced Mario Doyen Lindsay, Jr., 26, to 5 years and 10 months in prison on a plea to a charge of felon in possession of a firearm. The sentence was on the low end of federal sentencing guidelines. Lindsay will be on supervised release for 3 years following prison. On July 3, 2020, an Iowa State Patrol trooper stopped a vehicle for speeding and found a high-capacity magazine for a pistol in the glove box, but no pistol. Lindsay was a passenger in the vehicle. A few weeks later, police noticed DeQuantario Galloway Bass has posted Snapchat photos showing a 9mm Canik handgun. Officers used geotags associated with the pictures to determine where the photos were taken and then went there, stopping Galloway Bass's vehicle, according to court records. Lindsay was a passenger in the car, and police found the Canik pistol with a 32-round magazine under the passenger seat. Lindsay's history with guns includes a 2013 arrest for bringing a revolver to a high school football game. The weapon was found in his gym bag by school officials after he was injured on the field, and a 2016 arrest for an attack that peppered a Waterloo home with 14 bullet holes, injuring a 9-year-old boy inside. Two held in Wednesday shooting in Waterloo. This also filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. Two people have been arrested after a Waterloo man was shot in the leg during a Wednesday argument. Police and paramedics were called to gunfire in the 600 block of West 3rd Street and found Reginald Gowan Smith with a gunshot wound to his leg. He was taken to a local hospital for treatment. Investigators located spent 9mm shell casings on the street. Officers stopped two people matching the description of the assailants at 188 West 10th Street and found two discarded 9mm handguns between the West 3rd Street shooting scene and the 10th Street home. Investigators also obtained a video of the fight, including footage of Smith being chased and suspects firing, according to court records. Police arrested Aterius Montel Cortez Alexander, 24, and Roland Frazier, 19, both of 217 Sunnyside Avenue, for intimidation with a weapon, going armed, and carrying weapons. Both were released from jail pending trial. Officers were later called to the Sunnyside Avenue address after a resident discovered a bullet hole in the residence. Tama County Sheriff refusing COVID-19 vaccines for prisoners. Toledo. Tama County Sheriff Dennis Cusera is refusing to allow jail inmates access to COVID-19 vaccines, citing the jail's lack of medical staff, among other things. Cusera confirmed that inmates are not being given access to the vaccines, television station KCRG reported Wednesday, saying in an email that we do not have medical staff on site that could give the vaccine even if we did offer it, unquote. Cusera said for that reason, jail staff would have to take inmates out of jail to get a vaccine, which is not in the best interest of the inmates' health and security. Cusera insisted Tama County inmates have little risk of exposure because each prisoner is quarantined for a time before being placed into the general population. Jail staff have little direct contact with prisoners, Cusera said. Cusera did not immediately respond to a phone message left Thursday seeking comment, including a question about how many inmates are currently being held in the county jail. Information found the county's website says the jail has a capacity of 30 inmates. Iowa prisons saw the virus run rampant at times among prisoners during the outbreak. Nearly 4,800 inmates in Iowa prisons have tested positive for COVID-19 since the pandemic started. Cases have slowed significantly as vaccines rolled out, with just 116 cases since March 1st, the station reported. This next story about Hawkeye Community College was written by Andrew Wind. Trustees leaving Hawkeye Community College Board create three open seats. Five seats are up for election on the 9-member board. Waterloo. Two trustees finishing their first terms and a 9-year veteran of the Hawkeye Community College Board are not planning to run in the November 2nd election. John Allen, Joan Webster Vorer, and Todd Rolfson are among five trustees whose seats are up for election on the 9-member board. Allen and Webster Vorer said they've had good experiences on the board and believe the college is in good hands. Rolfson said in an email that he isn't running again, but the Courier didn't have an opportunity to interview him before deadline. Allen of Cedar Falls was elected to the Director District 9 seat in 2017. Webster Vorer of Hudson has held the Director District 7 seat since 2012. She was appointed to fill out someone else's term and has since been elected to two full terms. Rolfson of Jessup was elected to the Director District 4 seat in 2017. District 9 includes a portion of Cedar Falls Community Schools that encompasses the northern and central part of the city of Cedar Falls, plus the portion of Union Township within the school district. District 7 includes portions of Cedar Falls, rural Waterloo, and the city of Hudson. District 4 represents the Dunkerton, East Buchanan, Independence, and Jessup school districts. Allen decided he is ready to let someone else that can devote more time to it run for the position. He has been spending more time traveling with his wife in the past year and expects that to continue. Quote, although it isn't a huge commitment, I just feel that we have a lot of plans to travel, he said. During the last year, I missed a couple of meetings when we were traveling in Florida. Webster Vore said she is not seeking another term for personal reasons. Quote, I feel really good about having served on the board, she noted, but it's time for someone else to take the helm. She added, quote, we had and have great leadership at the college. Quote, I think Hawkeye's in a very good place. It's been great serving with the current board. They're a group of wonderful individuals that are invested in doing the best for the college and the students and the stakeholders of Hawkeye Community College, unquote. Allen is also pleased with his term on the board. Quote, I think the last 4 years, we've continued to improve, and we have a phenomenal president, he said. Quote, Dr. Todd Holcomb is a great leader. I really feel good about the leadership that Dr. Holcomb provided through the whole COVID thing. Trustee Bruce Clark, whose Director District 5 seat is up for election, hasn't determined yet if he'll seek another term. Quote, as of yet, I'm undecided, he said. When it's close to the deadline, I'll decide, unquote. The other trustee whose term is ending, Shara Sel Baker of Dyke, could not be reached for comment. She holds the Director District 3 seat. The period for candidates to file nominating petition opens August 23rd and continues through September 16th. In addition to community college board seats, school board and city council positions will be on November 2nd ballots throughout Iowa. For more information about upcoming elections across Black Hawk County, go to the Black Hawk County website. Now in the sports section, UNI football. Relentless pursuit. UNI's Jared Brinkman leads with relentless approach. Story filed by Craig Sesker and begins with a photograph of Jared Brinkman. Cedar Falls. Go ahead and try to double-team UNI defensive tackle Jared Brinkman. It doesn't matter. He's still going to find a way to make plays on the football field. If it seems like the standout All-American has been in Cedar Falls forever, he has. Just ask the frustrated defensive coordinators of Northern Iowa opponents. Their game plan revolves around neutralizing the 6'2", 290-pound senior. But Brinkman figures out a way to be effective. You simply can't stop the high-energy Brinkman. Quote, Jared is relentless. He's passionate, and he plays the game with a motor and intensity you have to play with to be great. UNI coach Mark Farley said, he is great at creating leverage, and he is really hard to block. Jared has been effective every year he has been here against the best teams we've played because of his consistency. He continues to improve because of how committed he is. He works hard 365 days a year, unquote. Brinkman led the Missouri Valley Football Conference with 9 tackles for loss this past spring. He also had 3 quarterback hurries and forced 2 fumbles. He's the anchor of a strong and experienced defense that yielded just 15 points per game last season. Quote, Jared is a great leader who just loves to play football. UNI defensive coordinator Jeremiah Johnson said, quote, he's so strong and always commands a double team. When that happens, a linebacker goes unblocked. Jared creates opportunities for other players on our defense to make plays. Brinkman, who earned All-State honors for Prep Powerhouse Iowa City Regina, has a consensus first team All-American for Northern Iowa this past season. Quote, "It's awesome to be back out here playing football again," Brinkman said. Quote, "It's really exciting to have all of our starters back. Everything didn't go quite how we wanted in the spring, but every game we were right there. We know we can be one of the top teams. We just have to put in the work," unquote. UNI is picked to finish fifth in a loaded Missouri Valley football conference after going 3-4 during an abbreviated spring season. Their four losses were by a total of 15 points. Quote, "We play in the best conference in the country," Brinkman said. Quote, "We just have to play hard for four quarters and not let up. We know it's going to be a challenge every week, but we will be ready for it. I'm looking forward to this season," unquote. Brinkman is the type of player who could make an impact on the next level. Quote, "Coach Pop has done a great job developing Jared, and I hope he gets a shot at the NFL," Johnson said. "NFL scouts will say he's not very tall, but if they put on film and watch Jared play, they will have a hard time not talking to him. He's a lot better athlete than people give him credit for. He's quick, and he's very hard to block," unquote. Brinkman has kept his pro prospects in the proper perspective. Brinkman is in his final semester at Northern Iowa, and he is on track to earn his degree in physical education and administration in December. He hopes to become an athletic director. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, August 13th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for being with us today.